As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Well, how about it? Home sweet home once again. The Toronto Maple Leafs 4-3 shootout winners against the Los Angeles Kings in a rare fight at 5 p.m. start as we welcome you to Leafs Nation postgame brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ozzy, it's been, it's been road sweet road actually for the Leafs earlier on, some struggles at home. They have made it home sweet home. And a very rare first time since 1992 having a Saturday home game followed by a Sunday tilt. And a little bit different games. This was one they had, they didn't, and ultimately they come up with the 2 points.
Absolutely, Gord. Falling behind early in that third period, the Maple Leafs did to the LA Kings. Did not look well. The Kings seemingly gaining momentum as the second period came to a close. Two late goals by the Kings, and you thought with the Leafs obviously playing last night, they were going to be the tired team in the third period. And then when you fall behind a team as experienced as Los Angeles in that third period, the chances were probably not going to look very good. And yet the fourth line for the Maple Leafs drew a penalty, David Booth, and 8 seconds into that power play, a great play by Cody Franson to James Van Riemsdyk ties the hockey game, and then the game was really even after that. And give the Leafs a lot of credit. They hung in tough against the Los Angeles Kings and a well-deserved win with an unlikely winner in the net, James Reimer, okay, stopping all three shootouts by the LA Kings. What are you saying? Okay.
Let's go back to the start about that, the goalie debate, and It's funny, and it seemed, I think, I guess Chris Johnson will join us later on. He felt it was Reimer's start. Pretty well everybody else, the two of us, believed it would be Bernier. I still said Randy Carlyle, who knows what he's going to do when he started Reimer against the Chicago Blackhawks. What was your thinking when you heard it was James Reimer?
Well, that it was going to be okay, obviously. Thought it was probably going to be James last night after the performance against Detroit. And the word yesterday morning was that his groin was tweaked a little bit, and that was probably the reason why he was not starting. So let's stay tuned. He was well enough to be on the bench, and if in emergency situation, I guess it wasn't so bad that he could not compete and play. But again, you like your goaltenders, especially if they're dealing with the groin, to be 100%.
Absolutely.
You know, there's no question about that. And so I was a little bit confused in that he was on the bench, and then all of a sudden he is playing tonight, and all is well. Whereas Bernier could have faced his old team, which would have been, I mean, seriously, with him playing last night, and I know the analytics and all that kind of stuff, but you can't tell me that he can't perform or give you a great back-to-back performance going against his old team after a big win last night against
Detroit. No question about that. And when we were chatting last night after the Red Wing game, I felt this tweak by Reimer had given, not that Randy Carlyle needs an out to start Bernier. Randy Carlyle's not afraid or above the feedback of going with a goaltender back to back. I just thought any kind of little concern about a goaltender in the groin area, and then after the way Bernier's playing, put him back in. I'm wondering how much he, of course, he got to face his old team last year in Los Angeles, so maybe that's even bigger, playing back in your old home arena, whatever, get it out of your system. I just thought it might be something, not that he gets his nose out of joint, but I would think it'd be a game I'd want to start.
Absolutely. Why wouldn't you want to start? I mean, against your old team at any time. I remember the number of years after you were traded by your old team, how much you looked forward to it. And you looked at when the schedule came out in the summertime, when you were going to play that team. You know, for me, the first time playing against the Detroit Red Wings as a New York Ranger, or then as a Maple Leaf playing the Ranger, was the same thing. You looked forward to it, and I can't imagine as a goaltender. Yeah, okay, he had his nice start last year in Los Angeles, right? And then he gets hurt.
Yeah.
But again, his old team wins the cup last season. This is their first time that they play against the Kings this year. And yes, you're on a bit of a roll. And if you're the starting goaltender and you're playing as well as you have as of late, don't you want that net?
Absolutely.
Especially against your old team.
So. Absolutely. But, I mean, Randy Carlyle certainly is pushing all the right buttons of late when you're, 9-1-1 in your last 11? That is the way. We talked about a number of things tonight. And one thing that impresses me about this team. And it's, when I say compared to last year, the last 20 games are probably that's setting the bar pretty low if you're comparing to that. But I guess I am. And I just, when they went down 3-2 and the LA Kings are the defending Stanley Cup champions, you've given up three consecutive goals. I like the way the Leafs don't fold. I'm not saying they folded last year, but you kind of, it was rather predictable that once the tide had turned, they were pretty well done. And this time, and you mentioned the balance and all kinds of different lines, there's a lot of compete and fight to get back and tie it and ultimately win it in a shootout.
But here's one of the things I think the Leafs are believers in is that at any given moment, either a Kessel or a JVR or your power play can get the team back on the score sheet, which in fact, it occurred. You know, 8 seconds into that power play that David Bruce drew on Trevor Lewis, I believed, in that third period, lo and behold, the Leafs are right back in this hockey game. And don't underestimate how quickly that, again, changes your mindset that on the bench, if Randy Carlyle, or I would probably say Randy's not doing it, but Steve Spott certainly is, and Peter Horacek would be doing it. It says, boys, we're right there. Stanley Cup champs, 3-3 in the third. And then you get to even believe it yourself. Whether, you know, I don't know what goes on inside that dressing room as far as their inner belief and self-confidence, but I've seen it happening these last couple of weeks that they're starting to believe that they do belong, regardless of what everyone else says. Or in fact, if you make the comparisons to these great teams, which the Leafs are not the, one of the top teams, but they're certainly in the mix right now in the Eastern Conference.
And, you know, you talk about that, taking on the LA Kings and all the different fight and the compete and you name it. But the big line, too, and I know it's a power play, but they've been rather ordinary of late. But it's great they have that offense. They still have that offense. Like, we know defensively, Randy's given them some challenges, matching them up. And, you know, you're better at picking that stuff up. They really haven't fared so well. But when you need a goal like Kessel did in Detroit, or when you need that power play goal like today, they've got that explosiveness.
Okay, so here's a couple of things that I noticed in the game this afternoon was last minute of play in the second period. You've got a 2-1 lead. You know, you could argue that the first goal shouldn't have been allowed. It was a high stick. It did not get blown down. But then you send the Bozak JVR Kessel line in your own end of the ice with a minute to play in the second period when the Kings pull within one. And Phil Kessel, okay, did his infamous flyby at the point. Like, no effort whatsoever. Okay, so that's one thing. And we've gotten used to Phil doing that, okay? Then I go to 4-on-4 in overtime, and it's a draw in your own end. And JVR is out there, and he's lined up. And who's this guy? Drew Doughty.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you watch that, the effort that he went out to Drew Doughty. I'm thinking that's all a mental thing. It's got nothing to do with your physical size, but it's a mental approach, how you defend. Those guys can score, but I want to see a little bit more consistent defending in those particular players. That is the difference oftentimes between winning and losing. And certainly the guys on the good teams, they don't do what some of these guys do on a consistent basis without the puck.
Well, you know, it's, and we were kidding last night that Phil Kessel played well. But you said he has no intention of being a Selke Trophy candidate. I mean, he really has no attention. And it's almost like you wonder, Steve Yzerman, Scotty Bowman made him buy. He bought into it about being, and he wasn't a bad two-way player before. Mm-hmm. But he bought into it more for Detroit. And I guess the big one they always talk about, Brett Hull, as far as when Ken Hitchcock, when they won the Stanley Cup in Dallas. I think Brett just bought into it for that season only. But that kind of thing. But are we at that stage with Phil Kessel?
I don't know if we're at that stage yet, and I know we watch Phil on a regular basis, and we pick these things apart, you know, no question about it. And, you know, one player that jumps to my mind that I might do a better job in watching would be Gaborik, you know. So he's the same type of player. That was the argument, and that was a frustration with Tortorella in New York with Marian Gaborik, like defensively, okay? But then he goes to a team like Los Angeles, and if we were to put the ISO cam on him, would there be instances in his own end that he would do flybys like Phil Kessel?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Probably, right?
More than probably,
But again, you look at some of the other players on this LA King team, Kopitar wouldn't do that, Williams wouldn't do that, Carter wouldn't do that. You know what I'm saying? So there are the comparisons of top-end players on Stanley Cup-winning teams that, for the most part, don't do what Phil Kessel does on a regular basis without the puck.
Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne, you're listening to Leafs Nation postgame on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And get back to positives. Why not? A night like tonight. And Cody Franson, again, Hey, the free agent thing is the free agent thing. Good on him. It will be a problem signing him. It'll be a problem for a lot of teams signing him. He could be as good a defenseman out there as an unrestricted free agent. And again, I've liked he had that 9-game point a game streak going earlier in the season. The offense, his confidence in jumping in, and that one pass, particularly on the power play, was a beauty. He's really contributed that way.
Well, he certainly has, Gord. And this is, he got a goal and an assist tonight. It's 19 points in 28 of the regular season games. I don't believe I'll look at his stats. I'll get back to you on that as far as he's never tipped the 40-point mark, you know, in his career as a defenseman, right? He's been in the 30s.
Yeah, no, been in the 30s. It was a column I did a couple of weeks ago about it. I mean,
I didn't read that one.
Well, no problem. I'm putting them all together for Christmas for you, so you'll be able to get a whole collage. But just about the fact, you're right. I mean, he's blowing by whatever benchmarks he had before.
But here's the thing that's happening with Cody France, and we could tip the hat because I think we're equally impressed that he's developed into being a lot more solid, you know, without the puck. Last year, I know he led this team in hits as a defenseman. You go back to 2 years ago, I thought the defensive pair with him and Mark Fraser were very good. They complemented one another very, very well. Giddy up to this year right now and being paired with Dion Phaneuf. I think it was an adjustment at the start of the year for Dion to move to the left side. And these two guys, you're telling me they're your shutdown pair. You know what I'm saying? And yet they play against the team's top lines night in and night out. And I think it's been a progression in Cody's game that I think he's become steadier and steadier. That confidence has become a big thing in the way that he approaches the game. And don't underestimate also his old coach in Peter Horacek, who, when he started his career in Nashville, Peter was the defensive coach with Barry Trotz. And so that familiar, whether it's the way he communicates to Cody Franson, you know as well as I know how important assistant coaches can be for specific players.
Yeah.
Positionally especially, that can make the difference where a guy is barking or whatever. You hear that message night in and night out, and then you've got a guy taking you aside, much like a Mike Kitchen or a Mike Murphy, that would be a very positive mental side to the game that I think just further enhances one's play.
Talk about the evolution of Cody Franson in that when he came over here, and it was a while ago, but you know, a lot talked about Ron Wilson from the get-go had made him a healthy scratch, but Cody Franson was a guy on an entry-level contract. The Nashville Predators were looking at trying to keep Shea Weber, Ryan Suter, and they figured they wouldn't be able to keep Cody Franson. Well, as it turned out, they weren't able to keep Ryan Suter as well. Make that trade right away. As I really think he got tainted by the fact that Ron Wilson didn't have any confidence in him. So you go from there, and always the last guy they settle with, going to go to salary arbitration, whatever. They give him one-year deals along the way. What's especially evolved the last 3 years?
About Cody Franson? Yeah. I think it's just the fact is that he's finding himself. And there's one thing I think we can go back even to when Ron Wilson did make him a healthy scratch. Even Randy Carlyle made him a healthy scratch his first full year. You remember back in the first five games during the year that they went to the playoffs? What are you looking at me like that for?
I agree, but I'm always saying, like, to me, Ron Wilson, the whole thing when you come over a trade and what he did, like, to me, he set the bar and tainted the guy from the word go. And you're right. I'm saying Randy Carlyle sat him out, Cody was among those guys you'd consider sitting out.
But one of the things, Gord, in defense of Ron Wilson, and I'm not going to defend him very often.
Okay.
You know, here's one time where early on during Cody Franson being a Maple Leaf is his practice. His attention to detail in practice or just his give a rip meter in practice wasn't registering early on. And so you looked at that and the coaches were watching this as well. And I'm thinking, this guy's not putting a real good effort, you know, in practice drills. How then do we develop him? Do we feed into that? Or do we then challenge him that you have to be better? And so I don't know what went on between the coaching staff and inside the dressing room and all those kinds of things. And whether Cody thought that he should have been playing more because of his successful years that he did have for Barry Trotz in Nashville. But that's exactly how that either he got off to a bad start with Ron Wilson. And you know, if that happens and you're not in his good books, if for whatever reason,
well, like that, anybody,
right. That probably was one of the things that happened for him here in his early days.
Okay, so go back. You talked about even Randy Carlyle had him as a healthy scratch for a while.
Yeah, Randy had him for a healthy scratch as well. And man, you're taking me back a few years. You want me to just all of a sudden have all eight defensemen that the Leafs had at their perusal that
I'm looking about what you thought as far as how he's evolved and improved. Like, I mean, or was it the kind
first of all, his physical play certainly did improve with Mark Fraser. I think Mark Fraser gave him a lot of confidence because the way Fraz approached the game. Fraz was one of the only guys, I think, on defense that would actually come to the aid of a teammate or play with that little bit of jam in his game, right? Like, mm-hmm. And then I think Cody learned from that, and he started to assert himself a little bit more, and I think people started to tell him, listen, you're 6'5". You've got a big wingspan. Play a little bit more aggressive. Like, what this game today, nobody does anything back to you, right? And so I think that aspect of his game is further enhanced him as a player. You're big, you're strong. You might be a nice guy, right? Mm-hmm. But yet, when you're mean, you're that more effective. Now, we saw him last night against Pavel Datsyuk, one-arm him and wow. fired him down. Like, like that goes noticed. You notice those types of things. And whether he is a mean-spirited guy inside of him, which he's not, and yet when you play mean-spirited and you're that size, people take notice, and therefore it's tough to go in the corner as a forward against a guy that big and strong.
That play last night, if I remember correctly, I mean, he gave the pretty good forearm mm-hmm. shiver to Datsyuk.
Yep.
And then didn't he get the puck up then for the empty net goal? Was that the mm-hmm. same play? But yep. same type of thing. Yep. He made the nice transition play.
Yeah, you know what? And so I think for any defenseman, and certainly a veteran player, where you know the best thing that can happen to you, and Cody's of that, you know, nature, where it's him and Dion that are getting the most ice consistently. They're playing against the top lines. He's going to get a chance, maybe not necessarily to kill as many penalties. I mean, when Polak comes back or whatever, but yet, you know, he's on power play, and mm-hmm. that's been changing here and there. But there's nothing better to know that you're going to be counted upon, you're relied upon, and you're going to play. There's no doubt. You know, when you start thinking too much and you wonder, what does the coach think of me and how much ice time am I going to get, then you start working that mental side against you. That's not happening anymore. This guy's well on his way. And as you mentioned, the ching, 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 do-re-mi is going to happen at some point, whether it's this season or he becomes a UFA.
Well, as much as I don't like to get ahead of ourselves about stuff like, you know, the trade deadline at this point or free agency in the offseason, but, you know, that is a reality with Cody Franson. How are they with Corbinian Holzer and Stuart Percy? I mean, if they have to say goodbye to Cody Franson after a great season, are they fine? Is it okay? Is it one of those things you understand the price of doing business and just got to let them go and have had a couple other guys that have developed?
Well, let's face it. Look at the three guys that are playing very, very well that are all up for contract negotiations. That's Nazem Kadri.
Yep.
And that's Jonathan Bernier. Between those three guys, how much cap space do you have?
Well, you've got none right now, basically.
Okay, and
basically
then,
none.
And then throw in Santarelli into the mix. Daniel Winnick into the mix.
Absolutely. Even I mean, David Booth.
You've got five guys now that are great, consistent contributors to the success of your hockey club that are on one-year deals, right? Well, Hello, Gord.
I'm here. Yes. I'm here. Just okay. Looking at the stats here, Ozzy. I'm listening to you. I hang on every word. About. I even wrote that was my last column that you didn't read. Yeah. Was about that.
Where do I find it if I want to read about
Sportsnet.ca? Okay. But don't worry, like I'm printing them all off for you, and no problem, a little collage that way. But that is the challenge that way. And again, Nazem Kadri, and we'll wait till Chris Johnson comes on about that because I know you want to bring it all down about that. You know,
no, I got to be the devil's advocate on some of these things, right? Is that okay? He had a very good game again tonight. That line did once again. Start down the Kopitar line, by the way. Head-to-head, the Kadri, Santarelli, Winnick line played up against Kopitar and Jeff Carter, and Kopitar was -2.
Well, Santarelli, I mean, you look now at Randy Carlyle's doing, and I know they're different. You look at Santarelli, different positions, 1-1-2 or 2 points plus two. More ice time than Phil Kessel, 19 minutes, 29 seconds. Kessel, 18:49. Again, picking it apart a little bit.
Did you want to say that Mike Santarelli is also +17, leads the Leafs in that category as well?
I'm just looking at the game right now. Well, I just broaden on later. Well, there's a little bit of structure to how we do it. Yeah. Later on, I'll let you throw that nugget out there. +17. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Leads surprisingly, the Leafs, you know, right?
Leads the Leafs.
Yeah.
How about Captain Dion?
Well, he's right up there too.
He lost one today, so he's +14. But he was up there. They were tied before today's game.
But Mike Santarelli with a goal and an assist tonight, Gord, gives him 22 points on the season in 30 games. 22 points in 30 games. And you would say that he's moved up in the lineup because, yeah, interesting enough. I mean, there was a few rushes by Joffrey Lupul tonight. But the Holland-Clarkson-Lupul line is has been kind of okay, right? This Kadri-Santarelli-Winnick line has been the one that's been the most consistent. And what I liked about tonight on the TV, and I don't know if you were able to see it, but they did a fast forward of the Kadri line last night against Detroit, where they kept the puck in the Detroit zone, in the offensive zone, for 58 seconds. And it was pretty neat, all the scoring chances. That was 5-on-5. So that's called puck possession, if you didn't know that that part of the game.
PP, which is also the power play. Yeah. So, you know, we've got to call it PP too as well, puck possession. So we'll taking a look as well. We'll come back. We're going to chat with Chris Johnson. We'll talk about a little bit about the shootout. Good seeing James Reimer. He had that one save. He wasn't sure where the puck was. I always like that style about him when he goes down, does the breaststroke, side stroke, fancy diving too. Mm-hmm. But he stopped 3 for 3. And the only one, Joffrey Leupold, who had I talked about it, Randy Carlisle talked about it, kind of a strange effort the other night, but he put him in first. That was the only shootout goal. Ultimately, it's a 4-3 shootout victory for the Toronto Maple Leafs over the Los Angeles Kings. We'll come back with more Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne, on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand.
Back of the net for Daniel Winnick. Here goes this line again into the cycle. Vlad Santarelli coming out. Scores! Mike Santarelli comes out from behind the net and roofs it.
Joe Bowen with the call. That was Mike Santarelli's sixth of the season. Gave the Toronto Maple Leafs a 1-0 lead. Ultimately a 4-3 shootout victory for the Maple Leafs over the Los Angeles Kings as we welcome you back to Leafs Nation postgame. Brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. You're okay up there? You're doing your Evel Knievel act on the revolving chair.
Yeah, you know, I was trying to get the other game on for you there, Gord.
Just trying to take care of you while
you just sit there and...
Worked out fine. Yeah. Yesterday we got to hear live as you got a scalper watch your car at Air Canada Center while you went in and changed the name. Did it all work out too, the name change?
Everything was great. Yeah.
Why did the first person bail?
What do you mean the first
Well, you said
person?
You were leaving the tickets in someone's name, and then you switched.
Yeah, it was my name. I was going to be there. I was working with you last night, so I couldn't go to the game.
For all you contribute, you might as well have gone and sat in the seats.
Oh, really?
I'm just kidding, Ozzy.
We're on a streak, Ozzy.
Let's take a look at the goals. Mike Santarelli from Winnick and Holzer.
Well, again, this line, Gord, that has been tremendous as of late, certainly on the cycle game down low. Winnick and Santarelli do a great job. Nazem Kadri has got a great eye, certainly offensively. Tremendous hockey sense, but this is the goal that gets Leafs going in the hockey game. 14 minutes into that first period, this is what you need against the LA Kings. What's the Leafs' record now when they score the first goal of a game? I think they're 13-0-0. There you go. Is it 13-0-0? But that's when they lead after two periods.
And then the Kings were the same. Kings were something 12-0-1.
Yeah. Anyways,
and the Leafs were 12-0-0.
They're outstanding when they can score the first goal of the hockey game. And that's all I got to say to you, Gord, on that one. Scoring first, 12-0, so now they're 13-0-0. You're right.
And I love getting that goal late in the period. Cody France in his fifth. We're just talking about that from Nazem Kadri and Mike Santarelli.
Yeah, so the Cody Franson goal next. 4 minutes and 30 seconds left. How about this, though? 30 seconds left in the period, and I know yeoman work again, and good things do happen when you simply just get the puck to the front of the net, right? And Cody Franson is probably the best on the team as far as just that half snapper or just wristing the puck with some pace, and that thing has got the ability to take off, right? Like just,
yeah.
It almost is like a kite or a paper airplane that you used to make when you were a kid.
Or like Wilbur and Orville, right? Just in that.
Anyways, a screen in front, and again, that line plus two early in that first period. The Leafs lead 2-0 after one period.
Taking a look at shots on goal were 11-8 for Los Angeles in that period. Then you get to period number two, and here it is. You get by that halfway mark. You get by the three-quarters mark in the period, and then bang, bang, the LA Kings, two quick goals. Justin Williams is eighth from Clifford and Martinez.
Well, this is one that should have been whistled down. A cross-ice clearing attempt was high-sticked just inside his own blue line by Jake Gardner, and then he went and touched the puck. It was really close between him and Williams, and yet Williams ended up getting to the loose puck after Jake had touched it. Rimes, I think, was a little bit surprised. It was a bouncing puck in front of him and goes over top glove, but that was a little bit of a momentum builder for the Kings, as you mentioned, and yet, as the highlights would have shown, this puck should have been whistled down, and yet it was one of those cases where you're not allowed to, it's not reviewable, so the Kings catch a break.
And that's what the referee was ruling, right, that Williams got it first, because all Gardner has to do is touch it. He doesn't have to get possession
of it. No, exactly. As soon as he touches it, the whistle should have been blown down for a high stick, and yet he misses it. It's non-reviewable and a good goal for Williams. I believe that was his eighth of the season.
And then 14 seconds left in the period. These are killers. We mentioned the Leafs score with 30 seconds left in the first period. The Franson goal. King from Regier and Martinez. And this was one where we talked a little bit earlier about the selection of the defense.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to be a little bit critical on Randy Carlyle in this one. And usually, Gord, his hunches have been bang on. But when the Kings pulled within one, and this is the last minute of play in the second period, and I think you need to make sure you play it smartly without the puck.
And the momentum's changed.
And the momentum has changed. And so ISO cam on Phil Kessel does a complete flyby at his point, man. Like, no effort at all to even battle for a loose puck, and the puck stays in. And then Cody Franson got a little bit flat-footed. You give the Kings credit. Dwight King goes around Cody Franson, and then he drives hard to the net. I did not like the way James Reimer played this at all. He was on his heels, moving back into his net rather than coming out and challenging King as he is approaching from the corner. You know what I'm saying? You get the picture if you're the listening audience on the radio, is that King is coming out from the corner, driving in that hard, and rather than James Reimer moving towards him, he's moving back in his net, and it jams in, and it's a 2-2 hockey game. And that occurred with how many seconds left in that period? 14 seconds.
14 seconds left in that. And then you go, so you look, the shots on goal were 11-6 for the LA Kings in that period. And then, okay, you want the momentum's gone, the Kings way. A minute two in the third period, Gabrick is fifth from Williams and Stoll. So that really makes three goals over a five-minute period. I know two were late in the first period. Two were late in the second period. This one early in the third period, but the Kings get a 3-2 lead.
Yeah, you know what? Give the Kings a lot of credit. Obviously, a great play by Williams here. And I'm not sure what happened to Jake Gardner on this play, how he ended up missing Williams coming out of the corner. But Corbinian Holzer makes a defensive decision. He tried to slide. I think he slid too late. That left Gabrick wide open in front. Reimer has no chance. But a minute and two into that third period, Gord, was not certainly the way to get off to a start in the third period against the Los Angeles Kings. But, better things would come as the period unfolded.
And we got Chris Johnson, but quickly, last one. James Van Riemsdyk on the power plays, 13th from Franson and Kessel.
Yeah, and this one simply occurred. The penalty was drawn by the fourth line. David Booth took a high stick from Trevor Lewis, and give the Leafs a lot of credit, 8 seconds into that power play. A bang-bang cross-ice feed from Kessel to Franson, and then Franson finds JVR wide open in front of the net, yawning cage. That was a huge tying goal in that third period for the Maple Leafs.
And, of course, they win it in the shootout 4-3 as our man Chris Johnson from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca, joins us. And, boy, different ways they're finding to win. This one was an interesting game. How'd you find the game? And I'm curious, the crowd on a Sunday, it just seems to have a different feel to it.
Yeah, maybe it wasn't always the best, but I thought it was a pretty good game. I mean, it wasn't a complete effort from either team, but, you know, that's usually makes for a little bit more entertainment. And, you know, I personally enjoyed watching that game, and, I don't like to see it end in a shootout, but that's the way it was. But, you know, I thought both teams, you know, kind of, you know, at times took turns taking over, you know, the things, and, I had no problem with that one.
Chris, here we go again. The Kadri Santarelli, Daniel Winnick line was the one line that I thought was really dominating once again tonight. The matchup was against the Kopitar line, and Kopitar's line was -2, and it seemed as though that line, the Santarelli line with Kadri and Winnick, controlled the puck certainly on the offensive cycle and looked very, very good for these last many, many games.
Yeah, it's clear that they've hit on something with these guys. And, you know, I guess if and when Leo Komarov returns, they'll likely keep them together as is because, you know, everything's firing, you know, the way they would want. And it's just a nice thing, I think, for Randy Carlyle. Again, you know, we won't talk too much about Nazem tonight because we spent a long time last night doing that. But, you know, I think it's a nice luxury that he can play some defensive type of minutes or minutes against the top opposition on the other side. And obviously he's helped out by his wingers. But to hold his own in that matchup in a back-to-back, I think, is a really encouraging sign for the Leafs.
I'm trying to remember the games last year before the collapse because that's everyone's fear that follows the Toronto Maple Leafs. But I was saying to Ozzy, I don't remember quite the same compete, and probably that's the balance lines in that, boy, you give three goals in that period of time to the defending Stanley Cup champions, usually the momentum swings and it's gone. And that's something we saw tonight, and that's something we've really seen has been prevalent for the Leafs so far.
Well, I think by any measurement, you know, when you're trying to figure out where they're at, the Leafs so far are a better team than they were last year. I mean, I don't know that they're significantly better, but you know, I've seen some areas of improvement there. And you're right. I mean, everyone's kind of curious how long they can send this off. And with all the road schedule to come, I mean, we know that there will be some tough times ahead, inevitably. You're not going to keep up a 9-1-1 run too much longer, I wouldn't guess. But, you know, I do think this is a group better equipped to handle it. And I guess we're going to kind of have to see. I mean, one thing they didn't have last year, obviously, was the World Junior Tournament here at the Air Canada Center. And, you know, seven straight games they have away on the road around before and after Christmas. So, you know, there's tougher days ahead, but you know, I think to their credit that they've really banked a lot of points here. They put themselves in great position in the Atlantic Division, and I think they've built up a buffer that, you know, if there's a skid to come, that they can survive it and still be in the playoff picture.
Chris, there was always that unknown or uncertainty as to who to get the start in net for the Maple Leafs. Reimer, who had a bit of a groin tweak yesterday, Bernier gets the call. Then the LA Kings come in. That's Bernier's old team. I'm sure he would have loved to have gone back-to-back, but Randy sticks with his principles and goes back with James Reimer. How would you assess his play? Maybe saves not of the brilliant mode, but yet he was pretty steady in the net as the game progressed.
Yeah, I thought he was solid. I mean, the first goal probably, I guess it should have been blown dead because Jake Gardiner had struck it with a high stick just prior to Justin Williams finding a way to bat it in. You know, the third goal where Gavrik put them ahead, he was all alone at the side for a while to whack away at. You know, I put that more on the guys on the ice. And, you know, I just think in general that Reimer gave them the type of performance that they needed. And you know, especially in these back-to-backs, I mean, one of the interesting things is I believe the Leafs are now 5-1 on the second half of back-to-back. Reimer started a lot of those games, and they found a way to get points in what is, you know, usually a tough situation to play in. So, you know, he gave them the game that they needed. You know, it's pretty clear that Jonathan Bernier will be lugging, I think, a lot of the load from here on in. But if they can use Reimer in these situations and get this type of performance, I mean, I think they're ahead of the game because, you know, that was, you know, probably better than average for your second goalie.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to make a story where no story really exists. I just, do you think Bernier is a guy whose nose would be a bit out of joint not playing the LA Kings?
I don't think so. You know, I spoke with him a bit last night after the game, and it was clear by then he knew he wasn't starting, and, you know, he seemed fine with it. Even tonight, I did a bench hit, TV hit before the game, and we were on, you know, and he was sitting there talking to Jonathan Quick right in front of Christine Simpson and I, And you know, I didn't get the feeling he was too upset about it. I mean, he did get the start last year in LA. Of course, he was injured after the first period and left that game. But you know, I would expect you know, when the Leafs head down to Staples Center in January, that will be Bernier's start, and that probably means a little bit more to him, to be honest, even than playing this game.
Chris, Cody Franson continues to, I think, really settle into his own paired up with Dion Phaneuf. I know that was a new pairing at the start of the season, and with him being a UFA at the end of this season and logging some quality playing minutes, playing alongside of Dion Phaneuf, a goal and an assist tonight, Cody Franson continues to perform at a consistent level.
Right. And well, I mean, he was a little fortunate on his goal. I think it deflected off someone on the way in to the net there, but the pass he set up James Van Riemsdyk for on a tying goal was a beauty. I mean, it was a tap in. JVR had established position in front of the net and, you know, had a pretty easy time with that one. And you're right. I mean, Franzen certainly on the offensive side of things is really making a name for himself. You know, he's you know, he's in position right now to exceed 40 to 50 points somewhere in that range for a defenseman. And, you know, obviously the timing couldn't be much better for him and his agent because, you know, this is a very important year for him. I mean, whether his future lies in Toronto or elsewhere, you know, this was a season, obviously, where he's under some pressure to put up numbers and to perform. And I think, you know, you're really seeing the benefit for him of having not missed training camp as he did last season. I think that really hurt him. I didn't like his game a lot of last year. I thought he at times struggled, but you know, I've found him to be pretty solid right now for the Leafs. And again, I think it's going to make things tough on management if they decide are they willing to sign him to a longer term extension for big money, or maybe even contemplate trading him instead of losing him for nothing.
We're a number of months away from it, and as I mentioned, Ozzy, I don't like to get ahead of myself, but I guess we have to because it's a reality. And what kind of coin do you think Cody Franson's talking about? What kind of contract, if you look at last year being a barometer, what are we looking at?
Well, based on the comparables, I mean, to be honest, I think he's in the $5 million range, maybe a little bit above that, you know, for the points he produces. And, you know, look, there's probably some people out there that's going to say that's too much. But, I mean, partially that's what happens when players get to the age that he is and they can be an unrestricted free agent. You tend to have to pay those guys more in order to keep them, or in the case if he goes somewhere else to get their services. And you know, I think he'll end up somewhere in the $5 to $6 million range. It wouldn't surprise me in the least. And I think if the Leafs end up either not signing him or if he becomes a free agent on July 1st, you know, I think that there'll be a fair amount of demand because, you know, as a right-handed shooting defenseman, that already makes him a little bit more rare and unique. And you know, he's the sort of guy that can anchor a power play and contribute. You know, he's got the shot. He's got some vision, as we saw on the pass. And I just think that those sort of qualities are enough that are going to get them paid handsomely.
Chris, am I asking a little bit too much, or are we of the acceptance mode with, you know, play without the puck for the top line, in particular Kessel and JVR? And those guys score big goals for you. They've done it consistently. You know, the only thing I mentioned to Gord off the top was, you know, as push comes to shove down the stretch and into the playoffs and all this kind of stuff, you know, there's a couple of times that late goal by the LA Kings when that top line was on the ice, I thought Phil Kessel really did a wave by at his point, man. And then even in the 4-on-4 overtime when JVR is lining up against Drew Doughty, I mean, the way that he approached and attacked Doughty on the 4-on-4, he gives up a great quality scoring chance, and James Reimer bails him out. So your thoughts, or am I looking a little bit too much at their defensive play?
No, I'm starting to feel you on this one, Ozzy. I thought the last, I'll say 6-7 games, maybe, you know, I haven't liked their game that much. And I know that Phil is continuing to get his goals, and James Van Riemsdyk as well, Tyler Bozak's chipped in a bit. But, you know, I feel like that the Leafs have been at, you know, a real disadvantage 5-on-5 in a lot of those games. And, you know, I don't know whether it's an injury for Phil, as we've talked about, or something else. But I think, you know, at some point, the Leafs should even consider looking at, you know, maybe breaking those guys up in some way to try to gain advantage. Because tonight in particular, you know, I thought that they did a poor job of managing the puck. You know, obviously they're on the ice for two of the goals, the second and third goal. And I think that they're a liability at 5-on-5. I mean, there's no other way to put it right now. And you know, I do wonder over time here, it's kind of the yin and yang of a team, and nothing's ever perfect. And, you know, as much as we talk about liking the Santarelli, Winnick, and Kadri line, I can't imagine that Randy Carlyle and his assistants are loving what they're seeing from the top guys at even strength.
Back-to-back home games. Do you think guys liked it very much? Is it a novelty that maybe they could look at more if it helps with travel and other things? Or do you think it's the kind of thing every now and then would be fine?
I think they liked it because they left with 4 points from two good teams. And, you know, there's still time now. Nazem Kadri mentioned to go have a nice dinner. So, I mean, if they lost both and if things maybe had gone differently, you would have heard more complaints. But, you know, it's a unique thing. I wouldn't want to see it too often, but you know, in this case, I didn't mind it personally. It was kind of different. I know the Montreal Canadiens do the same thing every year on Super Bowl weekend. They play a Saturday afternoon and Sunday afternoon of that weekend, and it's kind of a tradition there. And, you know, maybe there's a chance to do something like that here just to separate it. You know, you pick your time. But, you know, it's a little different. And you know, personally, I don't mind seeing some different things. It's, you know, kind of freshens things up a little bit maybe.
So is the night young for the Johnson family?
It is, because I am a huge Dallas Cowboys fan, and as soon as we're off the phone, I will be heading to watch them play Philadelphia.
Let's go Eagles.
Come on.
Just kidding, Chris. Just kidding.
I'm done with this show.
I'm with you on the Cowboys. Great NFL films on Roger Staubach, too. Boy, he's like the nicest guy in the world, but that's a whole other story. Chris, you're the nicest guy on this show, so thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week, okay?
Yep, sounds good. Tuesday night, the Ducks are in town. That'll be another good game here.
Chris Johnson joining us from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. Now, to get the LA Kings point of view, did you play with Darrell Evans?
Absolutely, Gord.
Yeah.
2 years junior until I don't know, we didn't connect my third year with him, and he asked to get traded.
Is that what?
So I'm not kind of sure why that was, but anyways, he got traded on to Brantford. They were the old Brantford Alexanders.
Well, and a talented Brantford Alexanders. Of course, I knew him from the Newmarket Saints days, but of course there's more NHL career, now part of the LA Kings broadcast crew. Darrell Evans joining us, and we'll talk about the game, but first, obviously, can you help Ozzy out why you bailed on him in junior?
Tells a great story, but Ozzy was a great teammate. We had some good times there in Niagara Falls, and I got ahead of him in the scoring, and he told management he wanted me to have me traded, so that's what happened, and I was out of there just like that.
Hey, Big D, it's great to hear from you, and obviously I know that you're traveling after the game has been completed there at the Air Canada Center. The LA Kings got back in the hockey game in that second period. They tied it up, took the lead early in the third, but one of Daryl Sutter's favorite things is the infamous shootout. Now the LA Kings go to 1-4 in shootouts this season. Your thoughts on this LA Kings team as they're off to a bit of an unusual slow start to at the 30-game plateau of the season?
Well, I think, Mark, what we're seeing is the residual effect of, you know, having played 3 years into June, 64 playoff games combined over the last 3 years, along with the regular season. There's been a lot of wear and tear in the hockey club, both mentally and physically. And I think that, this is what we're seeing. I don't want to say necessarily inconsistency, but, to expect, the team to play the same effectiveness that they would in a game seven each and every night is very unrealistic. And, the players, they understand they need to be better, coaching staff, as well, that, they know that the team needs to execute better. And, I think they're, one of the things that where the biggest adjustment seems to be coming is, back in the blue line, the amount of chances that they're giving up and the penalty kill, in particular on the road. That was the 13th goal against them. They've given up while killing penalties this year on the road. They're at 75% on the road, and, that's very uncharacteristic of them, a team that, prides himself in defense, but for whatever the reason, some of it has to do with the absence of Willie Mitchell, Slava Voynov not to line up, and then the injuries on the blue line to guys like Jake Muzzin and Alec Martinez for an extended period of time, has not allowed this team to, kind of establish themselves defensively like they have in the past few years.
Winning the first compared to winning the second, what was the summer like the second time after you win the second cup?
It was really kind of cool. You know, the first time around, you don't know what to expect. You're just kind of living, flying out the seat of your pants each and every day. And, everybody that, has been around the team, in Los Angeles for so many years, to be able to share it with them. And, the parade, taking the cup through as many different establishments as they did was really a special time. I think this time around, even the players themselves, I think, what you do the second time around is you try to keep it a little bit more intimate, maybe closer friends and family. You still want to share the time and with everybody. But I think you probably will want to kind of savor the moment a little bit more, knowing that how quickly it went by the first time.
Daryl, Andre Kopitar, I know he's one of the top leaders on your team, and the matchup tonight was Nazem Kadri drew the assignment of, playing head-to-head against that top line. And it would appear as though Angers is a little bit off to a somewhat slow start, -2 on the night. And one thing the Kadri line has done well of late is puck possession. And, what was your view of that particular line or the matchup against the Kadri line and how Kopitar's line performed?
Well, I think at the end of the game, I think you'd have to say that, that line was, it was the difference in the hockey game with not only their, what they were able to accomplish offensively with Santorelli picking up a goal in the shift, but you know, more so probably being able to neutralize, you know, Kopitar's unit. And, you know, that unit, they haven't been able to get into the groove like they have in the past. Kopitar struggling, putting a puck in the net, only one goal in his last 12 games. Jeff Carter's only got two in his last 24 games. So, you know, those are guys that the Kings rely upon heavily for offense. And anytime that you can neutralize those guys, you know, you're going to give your team an opportunity. And that's what that line was able to do tonight. They utilized their speed, their quickness. And, you know, hats off to them for their effectiveness. And like I say, if it had not been for their performance, I don't think the Maple Leafs, you know, stay away with the points like they did tonight.
Boy, you look at Pearson and Toffoli, and just early on, they were about the only line that was scoring early on the season. Still now, the top scorers, top goal scorers on the team. Cap-wise, Kings in a good place. I mean, they seem to have a lot of guys locked up. They've got some young guys coming. Do they have any big issues over the horizon?
No, I don't think so. You know, I think, you know, where they're at, I think management has done a good job at managing the, you know, the contracts and, you know, extending the contracts maybe a little bit longer just to be able to, you know, keep that cap in place. This year we've seen them extend the contracts of both Jake Muzzin and Alec Martinez back on the blue line. So when you look at, you know, their blue line moving forward prior to the season starting, Matt Green signed a four-year deal. And then you see Alec Martinez getting 6 years, Jake Muzzin getting 5 years. Drew Doughty's contract comes up in another, you know, in a couple of years here. Slava Voynov's under contract. And you know, so moving forward, they're in a good position there. And I think when you look up front to key players, their captain, Dustin Brown, long-term. You know, Gavrik, seven-year extension this year. Carter, Richards still have lots of time left on their deals. And, you know, once Kopitar's deal gets put together, you know, the core of the team, you know, starting in goal with Quick, who signed his 10-year deal a couple of years ago, they're in a good position. So I think as a nucleus and a core, they've got a lot to build around. They've still become an attractive, you know, market for, you know, if there's any free agents out there that you want to take a look at a team that you might want to be part of. I think there's still a good picture knowing that this team not only has the ability to be able to, you know, win this year that they're in, but, you know, they're going to compete for the next probably 3 or 4 years and would have a realistic chance as good as anybody in those next few years as well.
Darryl, one of the knocks against Marian Gaborik, certainly when he played for John Tortorella in New York, was his just indifferent play, I think, without the puck. And obviously the 12 goals, I believe, he scored last year in the playoffs for the Stanley Cup winners. He scores a goal tonight. I know he's battled some injuries again. But can you give our listening audience a little bit of a comparison between him and, say, Phil Kessel? Does Gabrick's play without the puck in his own end, is he casual when it comes to that, or is he bought into, you know, just attention to detail without it, as do the rest of his teammates in a general basis?
Well, I think it's something that'll be, a continuation in progress. I think he's done a good job at buying into, you know, to what it takes. I think last year getting a taste of winning and understanding, you know, how committed every player on this team is. And when you're on the ice and you're playing, he's played pretty much all his time with the Kings. He's played alongside Andre Kopitar. And when you realize and you see how hard he works each and every shift, you know, that makes you, you know, have to kind of go out there and meet that work ethic. And, you know, he understands, I think, you know, being part of what happened last year, that's what it takes in order to win. It's not going to be skill alone. He's one of the most gifted players in the NHL. He's got as good a skater as anybody. You know, I think there's times that, you know, some of those tendencies in the defensive zone, like he'll have a lapse or two, but the coaches or, you know, and his teammates are the first ones to, you know, to remind him of that. So I think, you know, he's bought in, and you got to remember, you're kind of changing the style of a guy that was, you know, an explosive offensive guy. You get him to play a committed 200-foot game, and, you know, it's not going to happen overnight. And, you know, I think when you see periods of it, unfortunately, you know, when things aren't going well with the team, like right now, there's nobody there carrying the weight that they become magnified. So, again, it's a work in progress, and I think, you know, when the push comes to shove at the end of the year, he's going to be another one of the guys that, you know, the opposition fear and the Kings are going to be grateful to have on their team.
Darryl, I know busy and a full day. Thanks very much for joining us. Look forward to catching up down the road. Have a very merry Christmas, happy holiday, you and your family.
Same to you guys. All the best over the holidays and all the best in the new year. And a lot of good hockey to watch, so enjoy it.
Will do. Darrell Evans, part of the LA Kings broadcast crew, former teammate of yours. You know what? You picked it up. He probably was on the team bus, which is nice of him because usually guys will blow it off if they're on the team
bus.
Yeah,
very serious. You know, Darrell was really serious.
Except about you getting him traded.
He had to have been on the bus and not wanting to, I think, be his happy-go-lucky self, which you understand when you got management all around you, the players are sitting there, and you're on the phone doing an interview.
Right? He's a guy. It's kind of neat that he went back to Los Angeles and really he's got embraced by Dean Lombardi in that. They had a night for him. Of course, he was the big goal on the Miracle on Manchester way back when. So it's nice to see a guy be able to come full circle, embraced, and be involved and employed in the game he loves so much.
Well, you know what? He obviously married a girl from Los Angeles when he played there. Life after hockey took him there. And interesting enough, he started in the car sales business, doing very well.
I remember.
Cadillacs in Beverly Hills. And so involved with the King alumni and obviously got in the broadcasting profession. Does a great job. I enjoy listening to him, and we had a lot of fun times over the years. Certainly, he taught me a lot, Gord, off the ice. When we were junior hockey players, he was one of the first guys that was really into off-ice training. And, yeah, it was in the gym. Mm-hmm. I mean, we weren't doing a lot of running or anything like that, but I did get stronger in my junior days. I was a scrawny little guy when I went into my first year junior, and Darrell insisted we're going to go to the gym, and he made me get a gym membership at the Y at Bayview and Shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
And we would meet there and play some squash and pump the iron, and we spent a good number of summers training together in the off season.
Well, it's great of him to join us, of course, part of the LA King broadcast crew. But tonight the Kings do get a point, but the Toronto Maple Leafs get two, a 4-3 shootout victory for the Toronto Maple Leafs over the Los Angeles Kings. You're listening to Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand.
Kadri to the blue line. Frantzen scores! Cody Frantzen's quick wrister. That went in off somebody in front. I don't think it's Santarelli. He was cruising by. I'm going to give the goal here to Frantzen.
Well, if you say so, Joe Bowen, that's good enough for us. And he does get credit for the goal. Cody Frantzen, his fifth of the season, gave the Toronto Maple Leafs a 2-0 lead. The Kings did come back to take a 3-2 lead. Leafs tied it and win 4-3 in a shootout over the Los Angeles Kings. We welcome you back to Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Gord, can I mention this? Is that sometimes, I don't do this very often, but I have a little bit of fun on Twitter, and I read some tweets, and sometimes people will tweet you and try to engage in conversation in the Twitter world. And I had couple, I guess, Brian and Kim, talking about the game tonight, that the Leafs have stopped skating. This was early in the third period. And the guy, Brian, says, game over. And I replied to him, not so quick. And I said, it's not over yet. And, of course, the Leafs tied it on the power play goal by JVR, and they win it in overtime. And, he responded back, gutsy win. So it's kind of nice to have those little premonitions that you get a feel for the game. And these Maple Leafs over the course of these last number of weeks, and we talked about it, you were the guy who basically watched it as it unfolded, that salute gate that occurred. And this team, since that Nashville loss, has really come into their own. And that's been a galvanizing rallying point for this hockey club.
I watch the salutes really close now all the time.
I know you do.
I know.
It's like
you're asking
Chris Johnson again. Now, what was the feel of the game tonight with the crowd? A Saturday night crowd. You're always interested.
I'm putting all this on the crowd as well. We're going to continue to talk about that. I love the fact that they're cornered now. They said, we're going to do something different. So it's really the same, except they don't skate to center ice because it takes an extra 4 seconds out of their life. But anyway, it's all worked out well. That's for sure. And it is fun on Twitter to be able to engage that way. Too often you get people that want to draw you into stuff. So it's nice that the passion that unites them all, they're able to reach out to Ozzy and have a little bit of a conversation that way. We always have not so much a conversation, but we hear from Toronto Maple Leaf head coach Randy Carlyle. Here he is after tonight's shootout victory.
Again, you look at it, and you know, we were. I would say that we played the game in two parts. I don't know if they were fluky, but they seemed to have funny. That when they entered the net, they were going in for end, and one dipped. I think the Franzen shot dipped, and I think the Santarelli shot hit him and then went up. So it was one of those where we got two goals like that, and then we basically started to turn the puck over, and the champions that they are, they make you pay for that. And they took control of the game in the second period on us and tied the hockey game up, and then they scored early in the third. So we had asked our group went in between periods if, you know, would we have taken off a back-to-back to be 2-2 going up against the Stanley Cup champions tonight and give ourselves a chance with 20 minutes of hockey left to take out the win one period in your own building. And we were able to tie the period and lucky enough to win it in a shootout. But we just seemed like we were running on empty in the second, but we seemed to get our game back going in the third period.
Is that one of the differences maybe now from early the season when things do start kind of falling apart and reeling back in and get back on track like that?
Well, that's a credit to your players. You know, the one thing that we try to do is we try to create the template that we have to play to. And if we do that, we can be effective. We've proven to ourselves, and hopefully that we're gaining some confidence with this, that we know we can play, and we can play well for long stretches and longer stretches of time and not have the valleys in the game. And that'll increase our chances, because the road is going to get tough here as we go forward, and we're going to have to prepare for a team that's going to play very similar to what we saw tonight in Anaheim.
Kaprizov seemed to play a big role in the first two periods as well.
Yeah, they had it every one. So it was kind of hard to catch up when they started with the puck all the time, but that's what you run into, and that's where people have to help out, and your wingers got to be sharp and on their toes to help the center. And we did win some pucks, or there were some 50-50 pucks where their wingers were jumping in and grabbing the puck ahead of our winger or our defenseman in those situations.
When you talk about confidence going forward, do you take anything from beating a good Wings team one night and beating the Stanley Cup champions the next night? Is that something that can pay off down the road?
Well, I always try to temper the enthusiasm and try to remain level-headed, and hopefully that builds confidence in our group inside, because we think that this group's got more to give. We think we still have some areas in which we definitely need to clean up and work on, and we're going to be continue to be a work in progress, I think, as every team is. And I think it just hope that the confidence in there, that they believe in their abilities to execute and go out and play against good teams. But we have to skate. Can't turn that puck over, and we have to establish that forechecking game, and that's when we're most effective.
Jake's game tonight, and specifically that one-on-one bouncing puck.
Well, that was a weird one for us. We were kind of upset with it. We felt that the play should have been blown dead. And usually in my life in the NHL or in hockey, when there's a high stick and you high stick the puck and a member of your team or you touch the puck, it's blowing dead automatically. That didn't happen tonight, so what do you do?
Your record since Nashville has been terrific, but do you still see some danger signs, or as you say, just things that need to be improved despite the results?
Oh, definitely. There's always danger, and this pro sports is about danger. You're always living on the edge. If the game turns the other way, and then you look at the schedule that we have and the opponents that we have coming, it can have a snowball effect. So we'd like to keep this ball rolling in our direction and not allow it to go in any other direction.
The confidence level and the trust level with them. You have him out there against Kopitar's line the night after you had him against Zetterberg's line. What's he doing out there?
The thing is that he's not being hemmed in their zone, for one. They're able to play their game, and they're able to create chances and positive possession time and positive zone time. So I think those are the three things that you look at. And if you're playing in the other team's zone, it's pretty hard for them to score on you. Would be the way I would describe it.
Toronto Maple Leaf head coach Randy Carlyle. Ozzy, one thing as well, he talks about the high stick that wasn't called and led to Justin Williams' goal and the Kings getting back in the game. And that's part of the good teams overcome whatever calls are made or aren't made along the way. And the Leafs did that tonight, because that certainly did swing the momentum. And you're not at the end of the game saying, well, yeah, they got a chintzy call, cheap call. that got them back in the game. The Leafs did something about it.
But what are you going to do about it, Gord, when it was a missed call? And as a coaching staff behind the bench, I think that's one of the things that Randy Carlyle knows all too well is you understand and you gauge what your players are thinking or feeling, and you don't want to give them an excuse. So I think Randy probably said a few words and then moved on and reminded his team to stay focused. And lo and behold, they still made it 2-2 at the end of that period. But then they regrouped, and he probably, the message, as he said in the dressing room, would have been, do you like to be in this position right now, tied 2-2 on a back-to-back nights when you're playing against the Stanley Cup champions? And you said, you're at home. By the way, you've won 6 in a row here at home. And they liked their chances, and they found a way to win.
James Reimer back in goal tonight, faced 36 shots, so stopped 33 of 36 shots tonight. Mike Santorelli was the first star of the game. His stats for the game, where do I have it right here? 1 goal, 1 assist, 2 points. He was a +2, 19 minutes, 29 seconds of ice time. And what the Leafs do for home games is they bring out a duo to face the media. And here they were talking to the media after tonight's game, James Reimer and Mike Santorelli.
Awesome players, they're world class, and we're just getting pucks in deep, and got to play the right way and kind of watch our turnovers because they could really hurt us. So when we're at our best, we're doing that.
So was that your birthday present to yourself today?
Yeah, it was a good birthday. I get 2 points for sure.
Can you describe either of you guys the club resilience when you're down 3-2 and the Kings seem to have gathered momentum before you're able to get it back in the power play?
I think we got a lot of character in the room, and we got a huge desire to win. And so, we could have buckled if, we let that early one in the third in, but we stuck with it and we kept playing, kept getting shots and drew a penalty. And we're lucky enough to get right back into it.
A couple of strange ones against you, regulation, one that looked like it might have been a high stick, and then one that kind of found a ball.
Yeah, a couple of bad bounces. I mean, honestly, I don't know how that second one went in. I thought my skate was right against the post and my blocker was there. So, sometimes they find a way in the net. It's a little unfortunate. But, you get a couple of bad bounces, but you just got to keep playing and keep on your toes and trust that your teammates are going to be there for you and hopefully pop a few in.
Like, what's your team's mindset after a good team like the LA Kings comes back and gets 3 goals? Do you feel it slipping away, or do you think, geez, we're still in this for a good hockey team?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Rhymes played. He saved us there and held us in it. And, good teams find a way to come back. And we were able to do that tonight. And, we just got to, stick to our structure and stick to what makes us, a good team. And we'll be successful.
You're one of many new players on the team. Why do you think so many different kind of players put together on this club so far?
Yeah, I just think, when we play as a five-man unit, I think, the best teams in the league, they all play as a five-man unit, and we're doing that right now, and that's what we got to keep doing.
Well, Mike Santorelli, James Reimer, after tonight's shootout victory, birthday present they talked about. Mike Santorelli, 29 years old, he's not 23, not 24. He's a guy that's not trying to find himself in a lot of ways. He's really different kind. Trying to get back, back in track, a regular NHL guy. Fifth multi-point game, is that right, Matt? Fifth multi-point game with the Leafs tonight.
Yeah, and reminded me this week, he went to University of Northern Michigan, way up there in Marquette, and drafted by the Nashville Predators, spent a few years there, then on to Florida, then on to Vancouver. And so when you play college hockey, then you graduate into the National Hockey League, you become a pro a little bit later.
Yeah.
He's in his early 20s before he finally turned pro. So, yeah, he's been around the block a little bit and a good veteran type of presence and playing with a lot of confidence. And Randy Carlyle is showing a lot of confidence in Mike Santorelli. He described how when you play against teams' top lines is you always have to work and move your feet. And one thing you can say about not only him but Daniel Winnick is those guys never stop skating and working. And there's a reason why they – are controlling the puck as often as they have as of late.
Well, they are two of the stars of tonight's game. When we come back, Kevin McGran will switch gears a little bit, talk about the World Juniors. The Canadian team makes some cuts. We'll come back. A 4-3 shootout victory for the Toronto Maple Leafs over the Los Angeles Kings. Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne, Leafs Nation postgame on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand.
Kopitar gathers at center. Left-handed shot, works in, Deke shoots it over the net! James Reimer, a perfect 3-for-3, he may have got a piece of it, and the Leafs are going to win it in a shootout.
Well, that's the final call from Joe Bowen tonight, the Anze Kopitar unsuccessful. The only successful shooter was Joffrey Lupul, the first shooter for the Toronto Maple Leafs, so 4-3. Shootout victory for the Toronto Maple Leafs over the Los Angeles Kings. We welcome you back to Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And 30 games into the season, Ozzie, and after 28, the Leafs just had one shootout, and that was a loss to the Colorado Avalanche. And all of a sudden, bang, bang, we see them again. Been below what years ago it seemed. There were a couple of times it seems like every second game you have a shootout.
Well, you know, and the thing also with James Reimer, if you go back a couple of years, was not very good in shootouts at all. And last year he found his game in the shootout, and lo and behold, tonight, as mentioned already, Gord stops Gabrick, Brown, and Anze Kopitar, so he's a perfect 3-for-3. And on a night when, again, you play last night and you got the big L.A. Kings that came off of a 6-2 loss in Montreal, you would have thought that if you were a betting man, you would have put your money on the L.A. Kings. But a gutsy performance by the Maple Leafs, and James Reimer at best after the performance in Detroit, he's backed it up with two solid performances.
Interesting that last night Mike Santarelli was the surprise shooter, got the big goal. He also shot again. This time it seemed like he had a quick beat, but the puck just rolled.
Yeah, it did. He moved over to his right, and he would have been as a right-handed shot on his forehand. It appeared as though he had Jonathan Quick beat, and all he has to do is go top shelf, but the puck rolls off of his stick, and that's probably one of the most embarrassing things, because now you've got to skate by the visitor's bench as the puck rolls off your stick. Not a good feeling. And yet, you know, it was all for naught, because Kopitar shot next and Reimer stopped him.
You also take a look at James Van Riemsdyk and Phil Kessel, who don't shoot. You know, you wonder if Randy will keep mixing things up or if he'll stick with those three. I don't know if guys get their noses out of joint. Who knows? Who cares?
Yeah, I don't know if they do. But the one thing that we've come to appreciate is I think Tyler Bozak's about 40% in shootout attempts success rate, and the top in the National Hockey League right now amongst active players. And he gets fooled by Jonathan Quick tonight. I thought he tried to go five hole, and Jonathan Quick looked a little bit awkward and yet made the save. But what does it matter? Joffrey Lupul, top glove. They said, and they scouted Jonathan Quick. If there is a weak spot on Jonathan Quick, it's top cheese on the glove side.
Right.
That's where Joffrey Lupul scores.
Well, Cody Franson, who we talked about earlier and will be talked about a lot as he's timing for free agency, is very fortuitous. A goal, an assist. He had 2 points tonight, 23 minutes, 51 seconds. He played on the Leaf D, got 7 hits as well. Stefan Robitaille had 12 hits. So that's a number that jumps out at you a fair bit. Here he is after tonight's win, Cody Franson.
When the Kings make it 3-2, all the excuses would have been there maybe to fade just a bit and watch them go on to win the game. You guys buckled down. Was there anything said on the bench at all?
No, you know what? It was more just... you know, we're okay here, stick with it. You know, it's one shot. We can make it happen. And our forwards did a good job down low. They drew a penalty, and our specialty teams came through for us and gave us a chance. And then our goaltending was very good.
The Leafs are still undefeated when scoring first this season. Is there any emphasis being put on making sure you get that extra shot or shot first or goal first?
You know, I think there's a lot of emphasis made of our starts, and that's something that we've tried to focus in on, was coming out with a good start. And, you know, when you're playing your A hockey from the start of the game, you tend to shift momentum in your favor early and give yourself a better chance at getting that first goal. So, you know, we've tried to mature as a group in our starts and coming out on the right foot.
Back-to-back teams with fairly different identities in terms of their style of play. What was challenging about the way that the Kings presented themselves to you tonight?
Well, they're a very physical team. They've got a lot of, you know, size and skill, but they're very physical as well. I mean, they've got guys that are tough to push off the puck. They're very good at cycling. They don't, you know, give you a lot of odd man rushes. They're very sound positionally, and when you play against a team like that, they make you earn what you get. And you know, they're a very good hockey club. They're tough to beat, and you know, Rhymes made some big saves for us tonight, and our group did a good job of sticking with it.
These two wins, what has it done for the team's confidence, especially in the room?
I think it's definitely, you know, been good for our confidence, but we're at that point right now where I think we're also trying to manage that. You know, we've made the mistake of getting overconfident, and we're trying to be very cautious of that, and even while winning, trying to you know, be aware of the mistakes that we are making that allow teams to, you know, get back into games or make us play defense for extended periods of time.
Well, Cody Franson of the Toronto Maple Leafs, that's our own Megan Robinson asking the bulk of the questions that way. Cody Franson, always been, well, I guess we talked about Salutegate. He was the guy closest to center ice, so he's always been personal, well, accommodating, you name it, but successful this year for the Leafs.
Yes, and we're going to move past all of that. I think it was Cody Franson that was getting ready to go to center ice when he got drawn back to not go to center ice, and that's a controversy all erupted after that. But I think we're all past that, and I think the
not
fans
me.
Are. You're not. I know. You'll always.
I'm not. Oh, no, I am past it. So I am past it. I view it as a instrumental 2 days.
It was. When push comes to shove, sometimes it becomes a silver lining in the feather of. Again, this was a challenge to the Leafs' leadership core. You know, Randy Carlyle would have said something. Brendan Shanahan certainly did. And I think a player like Stefan Robida, who was brought in for his veteran leadership and experience, who wears an A, I think internally had something to say to the collective group, is we're going to do things right here. There were some poor choices that were made at the time, and now they've righted the ship, no question about that.
Well, we look forward, of course, some more Toronto Maple Leaf hockey. We always look forward to the World Juniors as well and the Team Canada selection camp going on. Kevin McGran covers the NHL, the Leafs, but also covering this Canadian hockey team as well for the Toronto Star joining us. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm excellent, Gord. How's it going?
Well, we're good. Well, we're Leafs Nation. They're 9-1-1 in the last 11.
Isn't that kind of amazing? I'm just actually writing a piece together of all, like, after every win, there's, like, the whole yeah, but crowd, right? Like, after every win, yeah, but Pavel Datsyuk didn't play. Yeah, but they gave up 40 shots. Yeah, but, and, you know, you just one after another, they've knocked off the Stanley Cup champion. They've knocked off the Red Wings, I think, three times in this stretch. They played, like, teams six times ahead of them in the standings and came out with wins five times. That's pretty good, you know? It's kind of an exciting time, I think, if you're a Leaf fan.
Kevin, what are you seeing of this team maybe as we make comparisons? I know sometimes it's not the best thing to do and look back and say, you know, when is the floor going to fall apart or whatever. But what are you seeing that's different out of this group in particular as, you know, this team sits 18-9-3. They've won seven in a row at home and beaten some pretty good hockey clubs along the way.
One thing that there's actually a few things that I kind of like. One is that they really do have the depth going on four lines, that the fourth line is more than fighters and playing more than 3 minutes a game, that they're actually contributing and they're playing some heavy minutes and grinding out shifts. Another thing I like that they seem to have built, they seem to develop some resiliency now. I keep waiting for that shooter drop there, but they don't blow leads. And like tonight you saw them, they gave up the lead, but they came right back. They forced overtime and they got it in the shootout. So that's a different vibe with the team. So those two things, better players on the third and fourth lines contributing more and, a developing sense of confidence in themselves that they can hold on to games, that they can win games that they might have blown before.
Kevin, taking a look, of course, following the Toronto Maple Leafs, but Team Canada, five cuts they make today. I mean, I imagine the biggest cuts will be still to come, but of the five players that were cut today, one or two surprises for you or not?
The one that that really did surprise me was Chris Beeger, the defenseman, I think, from Owen Sound. He was on the team last year. And you'd think that even if they weren't quite sold on him, they might have kept around a guy from last year just for the experience that he had that he could pass along to the others. I think sending him home early probably sends a message that they really weren't, they didn't really like his game, obviously, and maybe it was just a courtesy call to come back this year. Yeah, he was the one guy that I thought would survive this round. They're down to a comfortable level. They're down to 8 defensemen, 15 forwards, which is a nice balance for the coaching staff to work with in practice. 2 goalies, and you know, we're expecting Connor McDavid to start taking some contact sometime in the middle of the week. So I think they've got themselves to a good level. They needed some bodies to play against the CIS teams because they weren't going to play their stars against those guys. So I think, you know, they got 25 guys in camp. They got to get down to 22 by the time the thing opens, and who knows if injuries are going to take the toll as well.
Kevin, the Leafs' first-round pick of last season in 2013, Frédéric Gauthier, who played on the team last year, he did not participate in Leaf camp due to injury. How would you describe his training camp thus far, and is he a lock to make this club even though he played last season?
He's not a lock. They have a few guys who have sort of fit his mold, Nick Paul, some others that are big guys that defend well and that can also produce offense perhaps better than Freddie can. But Freddie, he's got some intangible sense of where to be on the ice. He's actually pretty amazing. They put him on an offensive line today. He played with Braden Point and Nick Ritchie, which is kind of an interesting combination. That line together never played in their own zone. They played in the offensive zone pretty much the entire game whenever they were out there, and Freddie was in front of the net, and he was digging pucks out. So his skating's improved. That's the big thing for him. His skating's improved. I know Barb Underhill's been working with him. She's been down to Rimouski a fair bit to work with him. He's having a good camp. I wouldn't say he's a lock, but it would still kind of surprise me if he didn't make the team. He should at least be the fourth center. They're going to need a guy. I mean, the scouts that I talked to say that of all the guys on Team Canada, he's the one that'll match up best against Jack Eichel because he's as big as Jack. He's probably bigger than Jack and can tie him up a little better.
You know, Kevin, you look at the we slice, dice, overanalyze it. If you win, it's a great formula how you pick the team. If you don't, the formula's all screwed up. I mean, there's somewhere in the middle is probably the most accurate. What have you found in this tournament-type format, besides the goaltending, that's the key thing, a key kind of ingredient in the makeup of your team?
I think, for one, players have to accept their roles. You can't have a star player being on the fourth line and being upset about it because, you know, every guy on this team is a star player somewhere in his CHL team. He's a star. But if those guys have to be able to accept that they're playing a shutdown role, that's one thing. The star players have to accept that they're going to play fewer minutes because there's, you know, so many of them on the ice. The other thing is, in a tournament like this, I the way I see this team going, the way Benoit Gould is putting this team together, he's modeling it after Team Canada, the Olympic team. I think he's going to put 4 lines out there that'll just play a heavy game in the offensive zone and just leave the goalie back there and say, you're going to face 6 to 8 shots tonight. We're going to play in the other zone. And I think if you can dominate the other teams like that, that's like the ideal matchup. But if that doesn't go well for you, if you start taking penalties and you don't have proper penalty killers out there, then that can really come back and bite you.
Kevin, I was at practice the other day, and there was an interesting line made up of Anthony DeClaire. He spent time with the New York Rangers this season, has an NHL goal already, 50 goals last year in the Quebec League with Quebec. You've got Sam Reinhart, second overall in this past year's draft with the Buffalo Sabres, spent time with the Sabres early. And then Max Domi, who's off to a tremendous start and captaining the London Knights, a pretty exciting and dynamic line. Is the plans to keep those three in particular together?
I'll be curious to see that. We won't really know that until we come back and take part in real action drill. So kind of looking forward to maybe Tuesday or something like that. But yeah, that's a pretty dynamic line, the one you just said there. And even if Reinhart is the number one center and McDavid's the number two, which I can't see that happening, either way, that's what I'm saying. They're going to just throw out these guys that can just keep playing offense and keep tiring down the defense and keep wearing down players. Because if you have that line together, then you can have Connor McDavid with Nick Batan and Michael Del Cole, or even Jake Virtanen, who over the last 2 days has just been standout on fire in terms of scoring goals and setting up goals and being really, really hard to stop.
Well, the goaltending, and whether you think of someone brought up Al Montoya last night, memories of him with Team USA all those years ago, that's always been quite often Achilles' heel, pro and con. A couple of years ago was Malcolm Subban, should have been included, but he was too young. Then he was included, and they still lost. He went with two guys this year. Did you think that's going to be a plus, taken away, saying, showing them that you're our guys before it even starts?
I'm not sure how I think of that, to be quite honest. I see their logic, but I think hockey players are competitive by nature. Ozzy, you probably agree with that, and you want to earn your spot. You want to feel like you got there because of what you did within this camp, because all the defensemen are earning spots, all the forwards are earning spots. So I'm not sure I'm a big fan of just naming the two best goalies in the CHL or the two hottest goalies in the CHL or whatever the logic was behind it. Naming Eric Comrie and Zach Fucale. That said, they're probably pretty set that they're going to go with Zach Fucale, who was there last year as, you know, the guy they'll count on when the games start to matter the most. So their logic is let the goalies concentrate on learning the defensemen, learning to communicate, learning the systems, and not worry about each other so much. Again, I think I'd rather have a third goalie in here this week.
Kevin, I got to ask you one question because it's kind of been bugging me a little bit, because when I asked you the question about the Anthony DeClaire, Max Domi and Sam Reinhart line, there's no question DeClaire is a speedy guy. Max Domi as well, very quick in the offensive zone. The one knock for me on Sam Reinhart is his skating ability, and in fact is, how does he look? Can he keep up? I'm not questioning his offensive skills in the offensive zone, but to get there and perhaps play at this elite level with that kind of a speed factor, where do you think his skating ability is at?
I'm curious that you said that too, because when I saw the way they sort of whiteboarded it out, it surprised me a little bit that they had Sam Reinhart at center, because I just think he's a better winger, and I thought he and Connor McDavid would just dazzle people to death. And I don't know if they're necessarily going to resist putting Sam Reinhart on the wing. I like him as a winger better than I do as a center. And they have big centers in camp, but they're not really taking a step back if you move Reinhart to the wing. So I'm curious if that's going to be the way they ultimately go. Maybe, you know, maybe not right out of the gate against Slovakia, but maybe when the games get tighter against the United States.
Well, Kevin, look forward to your coverage, whether it's about the Toronto Maple Leafs, the NHL, and especially about the World Juniors this time of year as well. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
Kevin McGrath joining us from the Toronto Star.
Well, I want to thank him for at least briefing you and bringing you up to speed so you can get to know the World Junior team a little bit better.
Well, no, I just know you have it in for Sam Reinhart, like you have it in for Nazem Kadri. Like you get on Ozzy's bad side, it's a tough thing to get out of.
Isn't that what
journalism
is all about, is to take different views instead of always just, you know, making it niceties all the way along?
I understand. You're doing a very good job of that. Okay. The convergent point of view. Hey, let's take a look at James Van Riemsdyk. You mentioned as well, wasn't really a great night for their line. They're minus two. He ends up with a goal, 18 minutes, 46 seconds of ice time. Let's hear a little bit from James Van Riemsdyk after tonight's 4-3 shootout victory over the Los Angeles Kings.
Playing the second of a back-to-back set, do you change anything in your routine before heading into that?
Well, usually we don't. I mean, especially when it's an earlier game, you don't have to be at the rink in the morning, so you don't do as much in the morning to as your usual routine would be. But, I mean, again, as far as the game goes, you want to try to keep things simple, not try to chase the game and overly run around out there. So, I thought we did what we had to do to win the game.
How were the legs today?
Pretty good. I felt good. I made sure after the game yesterday, did some stuff for recovery-wise, and I felt pretty good out there.
When you get into a stretch like this, does it always feel like you can come back?
Well, I think we started out with the lead tonight, didn't we?
Yeah,
so,
but obviously they came
I don't know.
Back.
When you're confident in the way you're playing and the things like that, it definitely gives you an extra boost. And as far as knowing going into games that if you play the right way, you're going to give yourself a chance to win every night.
Randy was saying psychologically, he's noticed something's changed in this room since that 9-2 loss to Nashville. And he's just seeing players accepting that, you know, they don't have to talk about improvement, that you guys are actually applying yourselves. you noticing that too, especially in situations where you see a team come back and you guys are able to persevere? Correctly?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's a huge, I mean, looking back at that, that was definitely a time of a little bit of soul searching, and we knew that's not going to be acceptable, especially on home ice. The way we lost that game was very disheartening, but we took it the right way and we were able to learn from it, and it turned out to be a good thing, I guess.
There was that power play about a minute and a half and it seemed to really click. Did that kind of set the tone for the game, the power play a little bit?
Yeah, I think our power play has been doing a good job of moving the puck around, getting some good looks and trying to gain some momentum. So when we can do that, we're pretty dangerous out there. We're getting pucks through to the net, and then the seams start to open up, and then Phil starts to work his magic there. So, yeah, that's a good recipe for that.
Can you read anything into the significance of beating a good Red Wings team one night and being the Stanley Cup champions the next night?
In 82 games, anyone can beat anyone on any given night. So, again, that's how it is in every game that we play. So, I mean, you can read into it what you want. I mean, there's teams are going through different things at different times, but obviously we know they're a strong team, and we knew it was going to take a good effort from us to give ourselves a chance to win, and we were able to do that.
The Wings and the Kings have kind of different identities. What's challenging about taking on the LA team?
Well, they play playoff-style hockey. I mean, they're big, strong. They play well in the cycle, and that definitely makes it hard on our defensemen and hard on us to get some offense going.
James Van Riemsdyk of the Toronto Maple Leafs 4-3 shootout victory. Mark, we are going to be at Air Canada Center on Tuesday. Anaheim Ducks in town. And then after that, it's what, 8 out of 9 games on the road, 9 out of 12 games on the road. So it has been a wonderful home sweet home run for the Maple Leafs. That'll be a challenge again on Tuesday.
No, it certainly will. I know Randy Carlyle has got to be looking forward to playing his old team, and I know that the mumps have been going around. I think it started, matter of fact, in Anaheim with
Bruce Boudreau says Los Angeles.
Oh, Los Angeles.
That's what he
says,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, the big rivalry. Don't blame it on us. But 14 players now have gotten it. Corey Perry, I know, is still out with injury, but again, it'll be fun for Bruce Boudreau, who loves to chat hockey here on the Fan 590, being a local product, and he also follows the Maple Leafs, so he'll know a lot about the Maple Leafs and the Leafs continue to roll. Just listening to that last clip of James Van Riemsdyk, a real key for the Maple Leafs, him scoring in back-to-back nights on the power play. Specialty teams are often a key to whether you win or lose, and obviously tonight that tying goal in the third period was huge on the power play for James Van Riemsdyk.
Like you mentioned, their line was -2, struggled defensively, but they come up with the big goal when needed, and they did, and then they went on to win in the shootout. Well, it's a 4-3 victory. The Toronto Maple Leafs win in a shootout over the Los Angeles Kings back-to-back. Works great for the Maple Leafs on home ice. Oddity in the schedule, but it came out well, and we've enjoyed it here on Leafs Nation post-game. Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne. It's brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.